The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
11 minutes after 6, join in at 770-5633. Great to have you listening wherever. 106.3 in Jackson County, 106.3 KMED, 106.7 FM in South Jackson County, 105.9 and 99.3 in Jackson County, and wherever you happen to be, in Josephine County, rather. And on top of that, KMED.com and streamed on Facebook, too, on the Facebook Live, Facebook.com/Bill Meyer Show. Go ahead and like it. We try to keep up on various things after the show and sometimes before the show here, too. By the way, I wanted to start off with just a little bit of fun. And there's been a lot of criticism of AI, and I get that because you don't know what's real. But sometimes somebody can take artificial intelligence and take liberal talking points and then fix it. You know, when you hear that term out there, everything over the last, 4 years has been about saving our democracy. Donald Trump is a threat to our democracy. Everything, saving democracy, 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 right? Ad infinitum. I mean, you just could not get away from saving our democracy. Well, Newsmax has been passing around a tweet the other day of someone who took all the saving democracy and fixed it. They took democracy and replaced it with something else, and I think it's brilliant.
If the Democrats fail, it might be the end of American bureaucracy.
Our bureaucracy really is in fundamental peril.
The foundations of American bureaucracy under attack.
They want to destroy our bureaucracy.
We are a bureaucracy in danger.
We're watching an election where people are on the ballot openly advocating the end of bureaucracy.
That's what Republicans are doing, attacking bureaucracy, attempting to destroy bureaucracy, and they're doing it with glee.
This is the end of bureaucracy in America.
When will America stop sleepwalking towards the end of bureaucracy?
Right. It's Democrats versus, as Bill Kristol says, the end of bureaucracy.
We are essentially, as Neil put it, one vote away from sort of the end of bureaucracy as we know it.
I think our bureaucracy and the stability of that bureaucracy is really the thing on the ballot and really so important.
Think about this. Every time you hear about saving democracy, replace it in your own mind with bureaucracy. And that's really what they mean, the administrative state. This is why everyone's having such a hissy fit about somebody coming in replacing the old Red Guard over at CIA. EPA as an example. CIA, too, for that matter. But, that's a lot of the screaming and the hissy fitting that is going on because the Democrats have really owned not only the institutions but also the administrative state in Washington, D.C. and beyond. In state of Oregon, it's all that way, too. 770-5633. So we have that. Defanging bureaucracy. By the way, thank you, the Heritage Foundation, Daily Signal, for putting that up. That's just a brilliant thing. Newsmax fixed it. Fixed it. Every time you hear saving democracy, it's about the bureaucracy. It really is. The unelected arm of government. And it's about time to rein it in. Now, to rein it in, arguably, one could need a wrecking ball. Is this why Matt Gaetz was nominated to be Attorney General? That's going to be a tough one, isn't it? it's going to be a really, really tough nut to crack there in the Senate. Matt Gaetz, smart, has some troubled past in there, too. Remember, there was that that ethics report that was supposed to have been released here, and then he resigned from the House the other day. So the ethics investigation is over, and then Donald Trump nominates him to be the Attorney General. Could there be anything more fun, though, than seeing someone like Matt Gaetz take a wrecking ball to the system? I don't know. I wanted to... I'll toss that open to you this morning on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Matt, I know you're there. How you doing this morning? What are you thinking? Huh?
I'm good. Okay, so I'm following up on two things I mentioned on there yesterday. The first is I had mentioned that what the administration...
Hey, Matt, go ahead and put it on a speakerphone for you, in your case. I'm going to buy you a new phone. I really am, okay?
I want to get one of those de-Google phones, but I just haven't gotten around to it.
Okay, so, all right.
As a follow-up to my comments yesterday in regards to, I would have the Department of Justice
going after all the NGOs who were aiding and abetting illegal immigration into the country. Mm-hmm. There's an argument could be made. So then this gal, her name's Ashley St. Clair. She's pretty popular on X. That's her main social media. But she's basically a conservative poster. And Citizen Free Press posted one of her comments last night. And she said exactly what I said, that you have to go after these NGOs. They all have to be defunded and the money has to be cut off. So that's one. Two, I had mentioned that Kristi Noem, I think, is a terrible choice for DHS.
Yeah, but I think we're both in agreement that Kristi Noem is probably a process to get rid of it more than anything else, right?
Well, and that was my comment. I thought, well, maybe they intend on chopping it up. And then I took my mom to the doctor yesterday. I'm sitting in the waiting room reading an article from The Federalist, and one of their writers there said, forget about Kristi Noem, get rid of DHS. Because it was formed in 07 by during the second term of Bush, and it was supposed to conglomerate all the various security agencies to have them talking more when there had been a China wall between them previously.
That's right.
And then they just made the argument to get rid of it. And so that's just more evidence that I think that's all this is with Kristi Noem, is she'll end up, you know, managing TSA or something small, maybe FEMA.
But overall, kind of a head fake, right?
I don't know if it's a head fake. I think it's basically just saying we're going to put her there so someone's there. We have to have someone sitting there in the chair. And then basically the next process is splitting everything back up again.
But why would you have why would you keep TSA, too? TSA is another useless bureaucracy, horrible bureaucracy, has not caught one terrorist in all of its existence. Not one.
Look, you won't get any argument from me. I had neck surgery several years ago, and I was flying back from California. They pulled me out of line and made me take off my neck brace, and then they swabbed it for explosives. And I had this giant patch over my neck that was see-through, and you could see the stitches still hanging out where they had sliced me. And I looked at the guy, and I said, are you kidding me? And he conceded. He goes, oh, God. And I said, yeah, oh, God. I said, can I put the brace back on?
Yeah.
He goes, yeah. I mean, really? Come on now.
Yeah, it was just this side as they would go through grandma's colostomy bag, right? You heard those stories. You're back at that point, too.
That's funny, but that is so gross.
But it's true. That's what they would do that. They would say, well, there's obviously there must be explosives inside grandma's colostomy bag. And so they would take elderly people aside. And it's very embarrassing and very, you know, horrid, too, you know, when it comes right down to it. But not one. You know, when it comes right down to it, here it is. I've always said right from the beginning that TSA was the biggest gift ever given to the airline industry, because the airline industry then, oh, we have nothing to do with the security, can't do anything about the security. Oh, except that our flight attendants can now become Nazis, you know, if you look cross-eyed at them, you know, that sort of thing. When it comes right down to it, just put the liability on the airlines. I assure you, they'll find a way to make sure the terrorists don't get on board, okay? Would that be all right?
Yeah. Hey, what do you think about Dan Bongino for Secret Service?
Has he been nominated?
No, but what do you think about him?
Wow. Be a loss to talk radio, but probably a gain for the Secret Service.
He worked there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That would be all a reasonable one. Now, before you take off, though, Matt Gaetz, would that be fun, or do you think that might be a head fake? What do you think?
You know what? My thought, I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday afternoon. I said, my thought is the way Trump operates, and I had to get over this. I remember when he had Nancy and Chuck sitting in the Oval Office talking about trading a wall for DACA, pathway to citizenship.
Right.
And I was thinking to myself, come on, man, this isn't a good negotiation. And then after they got all excited, a couple of days later, he comes out and says, yeah, we're not doing that. I half wonder if this Gaetz thing is. Trump has somebody else in mind, knowing that Gaetz will not be confirmed by the Senate. And you throw out that guy, and then you put in somebody else that they're going to say, okay, we don't like this guy either, but at least he's not Matt Gaetz. That's my thought.
Yeah. So it could be the sacrificial, right? Sacrificial lamb here. Yeah. That's what I was wondering about, too. Listener wrote me, Hans Albuquerque, you know him. He writes all the time emails, and he said much the same thing. He's thinking sacrificial lamb. But there's a part of me, though, that's thinking if somehow they could get him through there, because remember, the ethics report, the ethics investigation, that's done now. It's over because he resigned. He resigned from Congress. Now, I suppose, though, that you know, they would bring this up within the confirmation hearing or whatever it, you know, it might be. And there's a lot of hatred for this guy, but he resigned, so he's out of Congress. I don't know. Do you think he was? I'm not sure quite how to read this one yet. But all I know is that if the Hugh Hewitts of the world are spluttering about him, it might be someone worth looking at. That's all I'm getting at. Okay.
Two words for you: recess appointment.
That's what
Matthew said.
That's what I was thinking about, because Thune has agreed on recess appointments. He's willing to do it. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Hey, thanks for that. That's one man's opinion. What about yours? 770-5633. We can certainly talk about that. Hissy fits in abundance in Josephine County yesterday over the pipe fork sale. I guess that auction's going to be happening today. We'll talk a little bit about that and other issues this morning. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Artisan Bakery Cafe in
5965. Hi, I'm Riley with Rotary Drilling Company, and I'm on KMED.
Delighted to have you here on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Some other stories worth of noting this morning. Rogue Valley Times reporting about the Williams community issuing a final rallying cry before today's forest land auction. This is the pipe fork, right? Community members and coordinators for Williams Community Forest Project yesterday said there was an added sense of urgency. The auction slated to happen this morning, by the way, 8:30. And commissioners, by the end of yesterday's meeting, steadfast in their plans for the auction to continue. Nine parcels totaling 1,800 acres, combined value of more than $10 million up for grabs. A particular issue, of course, is the one we've talked about this in the past with Herman and others, is Pipe Fork, which community members started negotiating to purchase 4 years ago to preserve as a natural area. Now, they're all upset about this because it's now going to be sold. Well, here's the challenge as I see it, and I understand why the county commission in Josephine County ended up moving forward with this. The county's out of money. They're already talking about how they're going to have to, cut services. Herman's been talking about this for, the last year or two, about what was going on. And remember, the whole scam about the way the Williams community was going after Pipe Fork in the first place was that they wanted to have a nonprofit gangrene group buy it, and then the nonprofit gangrener was going to then give it to the BLM so that the BLM could mismanage it like they do with everything else. And the way that the county commission was looking at that point, said, listen, if we're going to put it over to the BLM, we want to make sure that people continue to have access to it. Well, the problem is that the BLM wouldn't guarantee that people would have access to it. So the county commission, the way I'm looking at this, said the county commission was not going to sell it cheap to the gangrenes just to have it given to the BLM so they could screw around with it. All right? That's kind of the way I looked at it. And then you found out from the people from Williams is that they really weren't concerned about it being open to the public. Only the county commission was. So a lot of the people worried about pipe fork were really worried about, oh, we just want this locked up, like the gangrenes want everything else locked up. Well, now that the county needs money, they're going to be needing this. I guess they estimate it's going to be worth about $10 million or so. There was going to be sealed bids auction today, and it's going to be benefiting Josephine County residents. And so they're all hot and bothered about it. It's like, hey, you had the chance back then to have got it cheaper, back when things were a little less sporty, but financially, things are pretty sporty now, and that's just the way it goes. All right. Another Rogue Valley Times story actually came via Oregon Capital Chronicle. Oregon school districts and employees looking at $670 million increase in PERS payments because they haven't been making much on PERS. More than a 10% increase in charges going to the school districts in order to help pay for PERS. Lagging returns in investments of the public employee retirement system and could affect teaching and learning in some schools. It's going to be a pretty serious time in public education over the next year or two, especially. Not just this increase in this, but most of the public districts have had to contend with declining enrollment at the same time they're asking for more money. Well, that doesn't pencil with most taxpayers. The other aspect, which is another wrinkle, is that the incoming Trump administration is openly talking about, and President Trump has been saying this quite loudly, even recently, that closing the Department of Education, just shutting down the Department of Education and returning all that power back to the states, which would mean that our local schools will still be controlled by communists. They'll just be controlled by communists in Salem instead of communists in Washington, D.C., in the, the federal democracy, you know, our bureaucracy, that kind of thing. So that is a big deal. So if they close that, though, typical school gets somewhere between, last time I heard and checked onto this, between 5 and 10% of its budget can be coming from federal grants from the Department of Education. So that could be yet another wrinkle in school financing. Declining enrollment, closing the Department of Education. But I don't know, the state of Oregon could always decide to backfill those grants. But the beauty of the Department of Education closing is that all the agendas that they're pushing, you know, the DEI, and we're going to make sure and have, the trainee kids pushed within the government school system and everything else, that would go away. Probably to be replaced by, you know, trainees in school programs from the state of Oregon, but still at least to, you know, the dictator, the godless tyrant dictator is at least closer to you rather than Washington, D.C. So it's going to be interesting times in public education. Keep an eye on that, okay? And finally, we have Commissioner John West, according to the Daily Courier, has filed a lawsuit, libel lawsuit, against that Grants Pass Tribune, the online newspaper, asking for $500,000 from the writer who John West says is publishing lies. Lawsuit filed this month following on the heels of an October libel lawsuit against the same writer filed by Chris Barnett. Now, Chris asked for $100,000, and he's just been appointed, or elected rather, Josephine County Board of Commission. So they both claim that John Oliver Riccio lies about them in his online Grants Pass Tribune. You know, the interesting part, though, is in an interview, John West tells the Daily Courier that Riccio's animosity stems from the fact that Simon Hare has dated Riccio's ex-girlfriend. Oh, come on. Don't tell me it's about a woman, or that it could be. Oh, man. Boy, he always brings down the guys, right? Oh, boy. I don't know if that's true or not. Just a claim from Commissioner West, but, or at least an assertion. We'll call it that. Interesting times once again. Get the popcorn for that. It's 6:30 at KMED, 99.3 KBXG in Grants Pass.
At Pressure Point Roofing, your home is our passion. From your initial call to completing your project.
Yes, excludes tax, license, title, 250 dealer, VC dealer for details.
The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
6:36, appreciate you waking up on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. We've had a lot of conversation about the election over the last few months, the upcoming, leading up to the presidential election, which, of course, went in President Trump's favor. And I remember a lot of people asking about, hey, whatever happened to the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact? And I wanted to talk about that with Trent England, who's the executive director of Save Our States. Hey, Trent, welcome back to the show. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. Thanks so much for having me here. And what a great election.
Yeah, indeed. Now then, Save Our States. What is that all about first? Then we'll dig into the popular vote. What happened with that?
Yeah, I created Save Our States 15 years ago, actually, when I was up in Washington State working on election policy there, because we saw this national popular vote interstate compact movement that the left had started pushing. They're based in California, but they're pushing this in state capitals all around the country. And we decided the Electoral College needed an organized defense. So we have been defending the Electoral College for 15 years and also working on some other election issues, opposing ranked choice voting and just trying to make sure that it is easy to vote and hard to cheat.
It's interesting you brought up ranked choice voting because Oregon had a huge ranked choice voting campaign pushing it. And all the money, or at least most of the money, came from some NGOs or nonprofits back east. They put, I think, $2.5 million was one of the largest contributions for that. They pushed it hard and it went down in flames. I think Oregon was able to see through the falsehoods, I guess, of the beauty of ranked choice voting.
Well, that's what we saw all around the country. Every single state ballot measure pushing ranked choice voting went down. The repeal measure to repeal ranked choice voting in Alaska is going to pass, although it's very, very close up there, but it does appear it's going to pass. And it looks like the folks pushing ranked choice voting spent somewhere between I've seen estimates as high as $140 million, $100 million to $140 million,
wow,
up against folks on our side, you know, the folks defending normal elections, spending somewhere between $5 and $10 million, and we ran the table. Other than Washington, D.C., they passed a ranked choice voting measure, but every state, you know, D.C. is not a state, so they don't really count, but every state, right? I mean, it's an amazing story of, as you say, voters waking up and defending just common sense election practices.
Well, and the point being is that elections conducted in the normal way, okay, you get more votes than the other person, you win. That's pretty easy to understand. The whole idea of ranked choice voting, even the proponents weren't able to explain it very well, were they, from what I could see?
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, we've seen that over and over. We got a leaked document from some folks who were pushing ranked choice voting in Arizona. And they were basically saying, you know, if we talk about ranked choice voting, we're going to lose. We've got to talk about other things. We've got to distract the public. We've got to find bumper sticker slogans that direct people away from the policies that they were actually pushing. And yeah, I think what happened in all of these is that voters did kind of look into the details enough, right? That I mean, ranked choice voting just doesn't make sense. They don't want their ballots to be longer and more complicated. They don't want the tabulating to take longer and be more complicated, harder to trust. And yeah, it's just a great victory for common sense, trustworthy elections.
We'll be interested to see what happens in the city of Portland. You may be well aware that the city of Portland has ranked choice voting for their local elections. And the turnout in Portland was miserable. It was promoted that, hey, we have more choices for you. It's going to work really well. And then people just got to the point where they didn't vote in these elections. The turnout just plummeted while it was going up on everything else that was being voted on in a normal fashion, because you just had people that would vote for one person. They wouldn't do the ranking. And so it was kind of defeating the whole purpose of ranked choice voting.
That's right. And those were especially complicated because they were electing more than one person in each ranked choice voting election, which means that it really does get into a process that's so complicated that election officials really can't describe it to the public. I mean, it's a very complicated algorithm that relies on a computer to do this process of transferring votes from one candidate to another. I think Portland is going to continue to have problems with that, and hopefully they'll reconsider.
Is ultimately ranked choice voting, was that designed just to enable Hinkie, the ability to rig an election or push it, even through running certain slates of candidates, multiple candidates, in order to game the system? Is that what that was all about, really?
I mean, you know, that's a big part of it. We saw it pushed in Maine because the Democrats needed it in order to win, because they couldn't hold their coalition together. They kept splintering. And so, you know, ranked choice voting in Maine allowed them to use these fringe candidates basically as get out the vote efforts for Democrats, right? Those fringe candidates sort of pull people to the polls. They give the Democrats their second place vote, and then the Democrats all of a sudden win elections. In Alaska, it was more about the open primary side, the jungle primary side of ranked choice voting. Lisa Murkowski knew that she needed that to stay in the Senate because she couldn't get the nomination from Republicans there. And so we see it pushed for very opportunistic political reasons, people trying to kind of game the process by changing the rules.
Trent England is executive director of Save Our States. And let's shift back then to what happened last week. And a lot of people were wondering. In fact, I got many emails here, Trent. They were saying, Bill, President Trump ended up winning the popular vote for the presidential election. Why are Oregon votes still going to go to Kamala Harris? And I thought that was an interesting question, because the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact has been joined in by the state of Oregon. And I looked into it a little bit more, and I guess that there are exceptions that would have had to make a difference. I guess there are caveats to this. And what is your overall take on how that was going?
Yeah, so they created this national popular vote plan with a trigger. So it only kicks in if it's passed by enough states that they control an electoral college majority that would control the outcome. But it is kind of a funny thing, right? That these states say that they believe in the national popular vote, right? The Democrats who passed this in Salem claim that the national popular vote is the only legitimate way to choose the president. So why don't they just give Oregon's votes to Donald Trump if they really believe that? I mean, it shows how, just as we were talking about ranked choice voting being something that's used to try to manipulate the rules, what we've really seen from the states that have passed national popular vote is they thought that they could manipulate the rules of presidential elections to help Democrats win. And every single state that has done this has been a blue state. You know, basically all of the deep blue states have passed national popular vote. They put the trigger in there so that they basically wouldn't be in this situation where you have a Republican winning the national popular vote and they would have to give all of Oregon's, all of California's, all of Washington State's, all of New York's electors to the Republican candidate. They don't want to do that. And what I think is really going on is if the compact did take effect, they would still have the ability to basically decide whether it operates or not, right? Whether it's going to benefit the Democrats or not, because you could have one state judge in California strike it down there, and all of a sudden the whole compact would just poof, vanish. So it does look a little bit suspicious to me that what you have here is really just kind of crass partisanship that's pushing this whole effort to manipulate the Electoral College.
I think there was the Democrats were operating in this particular case under the assumption that no matter what was going to happen, Democrats were going to win the national popular vote most of the time because of the urban hive minds, right?
Yeah, and they've been making this claim for at least 25 years. I remember when I first went to Washington, D.C., hearing a Democrat say that, because of demographics, right, because America is becoming, the term that I think he used, America is becoming more brown. You have more Hispanic voters and more black voters and more immigrant voters.
Which, ironically, we're also breaking more for President Trump this time around.
Well,
interesting.
Well, that's exactly right. I think that it's so naive and disturbing to have anybody in politics claiming that the way you vote is determined by what your skin looks like, right? Democrats have really believed this. Some Democrats have really believed this for the last couple of decades, and it's led them to this conceit that they are going to have a lock on the popular vote. And if they could just make presidential elections about the popular vote, that they basically couldn't lose. And, I always thought that was just kind of a silly and frankly, really insulting position for them to take. But now it's really revealing in this election that, my original home state of Washington is the only state that shifted left in this election. And it's basically because Washington State is a very, very white, rich state. I mean, the new Democratic Party is basically white, rich progressives, and states like California and New York shifted to the right because so many Hispanic voters and some black voters are starting to vote Republican.
It's interesting. It's kind of going against the trend, or at least what they thought of was the trend. Now, it's interesting that there was some breaking news the other day that Michigan House bills that were in favor of the National Popular Vote Compact have been pulled. And this was reported in justthenews.com. They were pulled after an election integrity warning. So is there a possibility that the National Popular Vote Compact, or this drive for this, is dead after this one particular election? Because it wouldn't have worked out for the proponents of it, or at least the way they were looking at how they were hoping to push election results.
That's right. I think it's really taken the wind out of their sails. I think there are some other reasons why some of the kind of far left progressives want a national popular vote. It would force kind of the nationalization of elections, and,
yeah,
and they would get some of what they wanted through HR1 and S1 a couple of years ago. But no, I think that's right. I think that this is a movement that you know, the political reasons for Democrats to push a national popular vote just sort of vanished on Election Day. So hopefully, you know, hopefully they will maybe even repeal this in some of the states that have passed it.
I would like to talk in the final closing minutes of our conversation here, Trent. What are the benefits of Electoral College? Because there are people even today that don't seem to really understand what the purpose of it was. And the claim being made by other electoral operatives is that, well, you know, that was okay back then, but, you know, that was old. That's old news. It's a different country now. And I thought that the reason for Electoral College was always quite sound, and it made a lot of sense to me. But I was wondering if you could just defend it, please.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Electoral College was created in the very beginning as basically checks and balances. It puts an upper limit on how much power any one state can have, which means it puts an upper limit on how much power any collection of cities can have, any one region of the country. And by doing that, by having a check, right, a limit on the power of any individual state, it creates more balance. It forces the power to be spread out more across the country. And what happens is our political parties and our presidential campaigns then have to be more national. I mean, to be a credible political party or a credible presidential candidate, you have to have a lot of support across the country at the beginning. You know, that, and that's what our national political parties are all about, is maintaining this huge base of support across the country. Sometimes people call those the safe states. And sometimes it's funny, people say, oh, well, safe states don't matter. Safe states are the only reason why a political party matters, right? You have to have a bunch of people in a bunch of states who already support you. That's the foundation on which you build a presidential campaign. And then from there, you've got to go out and reach out to Americans in a very granular sort of way, you know, looking at what, you know, what individual Americans and American communities really want. And so the Electoral College makes our politics just a lot more national, a lot more sort of broad based. It can't be regional. Our political parties are healthier because of it. It's been very successful. Frankly, I think it's been even more successful than the American founders thought it would be, which I think is sort of a remarkable statement. I mean, they were brilliant, but they weren't quite sure how all this would work out. Mm-hmm. And it served our country very well.
Ultimately, it was about making sure that one big state or one big set of cities weren't able to completely dominate the entire country when it comes to electing the executive, right? You had to have support, broad support, along many areas of the country, not just the big cities. That's all.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you can't have a regional campaign. You know, a couple of big states just don't control the whole show, which is so important in a big, diverse country like ours.
What about what I think Nebraska has proportion? It takes a proportion, and they take the popular vote, and then they redistribute the Electoral College votes proportionately in their state. Is that something that might be worth looking at, in your opinion, overall?
I think so. Both Nebraska and Maine choose one presidential elector for each congressional district, and then the remaining two presidential electors statewide. So it's all based on how the people in their state vote, but they are choosing, you know, one for each congressional district, which has split up. You know, the Democrats have been recently winning one vote out of Nebraska, Republicans one vote out of Maine. I think for some states, I think that's a good system. It certainly would give folks in Eastern Oregon, say, probably a much greater sense that they're represented in the process if a state like Oregon did that. But, you know, ultimately it's up to state legislatures to figure out how best to represent their state in the process. And, you know, it was Thomas Jefferson who came up with this idea that, well, you know, Virginia has the most power if Virginia chooses all of its presidential electors in a winner-take-all system.
Yes.
So that's why most states do that. But it does leave a lot of people feeling like they're not being as well represented.
Well, as an example, in the state of Oregon, you have a number of congressional districts here. And the second congressional district, which is our district down here, voted very heavily for President Trump. Wasn't even close, okay? And on the other hand, it gets overcome then by Multnomah County and the various other congressional districts. But could you see the day coming and maybe you just assign the assign the electoral votes via what happens within the congressional districts? What might that be? A way to perhaps, you know, even it out a little bit in electoral college, but still keep the basic underpinnings of it.
Okay. Yeah. No, for sure. That's, you know, and we've seen states since the very beginning experiment with, using different kinds of districts, using, you know, you could, a state can use a proportional system. There are a lot of things that state legislatures can do, and it's, we really encourage that conversation, because what's important about the Electoral College is that the presidential electors actually represent, in some way, the voters of their own state, not like this national popular vote system that would basically throw that all away and ignore how the voters of a state vote. But as long as you're representing the voters of that state, you know, proportional, district, winner take all, any of those systems are perfectly legitimate and things that state legislatures should think about.
Indeed. 6:53, and we appreciate the take on this once again. Trent Englund is the executive director of Save Our States. Where can people go find out more about why the Electoral College matters? And because, you know, next time the Electoral College is going to come up as a topic of conversation, the attacks will come. You know that. You know that, right?
Absolutely. We set up a website called electoralcollege101.com, just electoralcollege101.com, and folks can find out more about Save Our States just at saveourstates.com.
All right. Very good. Trent, thanks so much. Good talk as always, okay? Be well.
Thanks, Bill.
6:53. This is KMED 99.3 KBXG, waking up with the Bill Meyer Show. It is Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Happy to take your calls, by the way, 770-5633.
It's amazing. What's right under your floor can impact your whole house. Musty smells, wall cracks, uneven floors, doors and windows that stick.
4% financing, and while you're here, save up to $2,500 on a new CalSpa.
Welcome to the Bill Meyer Show on 106.3 KMED. Give Bill a call at 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
Yep, indeed, 770-5633 to join the conversation. By the way, we're going to have Mr. Outdoors on the program at a special time today. I don't know if he's out hunting again. I think that's the reason why. We'll talk with him at around 7:30 or so. We're going to be talking about the efforts to defang and, I shouldn't say defang, but actually just make common sense out of what's going on at the EPA. Frank Lassie will join me and talk more about that. I've not had the pleasure of talking with Frank, but we'll kick that around here in about 10 minutes or so. Back on that conversation with Electoral College. Now, Oregon has 8 Electoral College votes. And, of course, the count comes from you have your number of number of congressional districts, and Oregon has 6 congressional districts. And then you have 2 votes for the Senate. So you have 2 votes. Those are essentially at large, you know, that sort of thing. What would you think about modification instead of the national popular vote thing, in which you would just go with the congressional districts? The congressional district electoral college votes get distributed according to the popular vote within those districts. So you look at Oregon's 6 congressional districts. We have the 2nd congressional district here. In Southern Oregon, parts of Eastern Oregon and Central Oregon, too. It's a big district, really, as far as land goes. And our district went for President Trump. No problem at all. That I don't even think it was was close. I don't know about the other districts, though. But out of the 8 that we have, now as far as the whole state, maybe that goes then to the state for the Senate's count. So you have 2 votes that for the overall at large by the state, that would have gone to Kamala Harris, no problem. But we would have at least had one. We would have at least had one electoral college vote from Oregon going into the count for President Trump. Would that be okay to you? I think it would be an interesting way of looking at that. I think it's something at least worth talking about. That also means in solid red states, there is the possibility that maybe around an urban hive mind or so, like in a Texas district, for example, you might get one or two of their electoral college votes going, like wherever Austin is, as an example. Austin, Texas is their commie city. But that way, it doesn't give all the power to whoever is the dominant party within a state. So in Oregon, you know, there'd be some representation in the presidential election here. Could be worth talking about, huh? Maybe talk about that. I think it's something to discuss. Of course, anything that might diminish Democrat power would not happen here in the state of Oregon. So maybe I should just let it go. We'll just let that go instead, all right? Town Hall news coming up here in just a moment. Hopefully more of your calls here to Mr. Outdoors. And especially after 8 o'clock, I'm going to have some open phone time. I was hoping to take your conversations on the guest that I had yesterday, L.A. Marzulli. A lot of people were writing me about L.A. Marzulli. And he was the one that was doing the whole thing about the aliens and the spiritual battle and this and that and the other. And what was your overall thinking about that talk? That's outside of my wheelhouse. I don't do a lot of the coast-to-coast AM sort of stuff. But, you know, when you have Congress having hearings about UFOs and UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena, maybe what these people are talking about are right on. Or maybe they're tinfoil hatters. I'm willing to take you on there. Should be fun talk. We'll do that about an hour from now. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome on the Bill Myers Show.
Hey, this is Checking In Charlie. How you doing, Bill?
I'm doing fine, Checking In Charlie. What's happening on Conspiracy Theory Thursday?
Not much, but I tell you one thing. When you have generals getting up in front of that committee or whatnot, and they're saying that they've seen things travel underwater faster than our nuclear submarine at the time.
Yeah.
I think that is definitely something to be said.
Do you think, did you hear the guy I talked to yesterday about it?
You know what? No, I did not, unfortunately. I was watching a baby out here in Dallas.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Go back and on BillMyersShow.com, and that'll take you to the podcast. Take a listen to that. Maybe call me back an hour from now when we do some open phones on that, because he was taking this into, he believes that the unveiling of alien people visiting and the technology is really going to be about a grand deception, because he thinks it's actually a demonic, a spiritual battle against the world's people.
I misspoke there, sir. I did hear that yesterday when you were speaking about it, and he was talking about that demonic realm about things, and who knows? You know, there's got to be something else going on there. I think there's a lot more to be said. And I did want to talk about the congressional districts and going with the electoral.
Yeah, in which you would distribute some of the electoral college votes based on the congressional district votes, that sort of thing. So that's kind of a popular vote, but it's not pure popular voteism everywhere. What do you think?
I think that instead of a winner-take-all situation like you have with the majority of the states right now, I think it would do those districts it would do those districts great to be able to have that vote counted more so. If you look at districts throughout California to Oregon, even out here to Texas, I think it would do them a great deal to be able to calculate it that way versus a winner-take-all.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's at least worth the conversation. It seems like it's kind of splitting the difference between a pure popular vote and just pure electoral college winner takes all. You know, you have one vote more than 50%, and then all of a sudden all the electoral college votes go one way, and then you have the other 49%, especially in different counties. Now, I know that would change things a little bit in Texas, too, because Texas, very solid red. There'd be maybe an occasional blue or so electoral college vote coming out of Texas for that reason, right? It would do that.
Yes, sir, it would. But like, say, the eastern Sierra Nevadas in California. It would make those votes really count.
Exactly. Northern California. It's one of those things. The whole purpose of electoral colleges, though, is to make sure that candidates pay attention to everyone, not just the big population centers. And it could be really interesting. You could actually see an occasional presidential candidate come out to small areas just because they know that they're part of that greater whole.
Yes, sir. Exactly.
All right. I appreciate the call. Check it in. And you take care. It is 3 minutes after 7. We'll check in with Town Hall News here in just a moment. And then talk a little bit about the EPA. Can we make some sense there instead of having the EPA warring against us in every aspect of our lives? We'll have it coming up.